This episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur is sponsored by NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. Bring all your digital marketing to a new level with their simple three-click method. And by Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Same here. I mean, we threw the pubs wide open again. The landlords all bought more beer and food, I guess, as well. And then some of them had somebody phone in and say, oh, actually, I was in your pub the other night and I've been diagnosed positive with COVID-19. So the pubs are all closed down again. Yeah. So, you know, all of that food has to be thrown out.
Yeah.
And all of this takes us back to marketing, because marketing isn't just about promotion. Marketing is also about how do you get your products to the people that need them. How can you solve people's pain? How can you take that pain away? How can you be a solution to them? But I think a lot of smaller businesses think of marketing purely as, oh, I need to be on Facebook, Instagram, or I need to be in the press, or I don't do anything, whatever.
Right.
But they don't seem to think about the other elements of it. So what is my product or service, and what does it do for that other person?
Right.
Does it delight them? Does it take away a pain? Does it solve the problem? If I'm open until 9 at night and I'm selling flowers and the guy's late home and wants to appease his wife, he can drop in and buy some flowers. Or maybe people don't think also during a lockdown, just because I'm a cafe and you can't come to me, perhaps I could come to you, or maybe we could do a curbside delivery.
Yeah.
And I think you were talking to me about a guy who packaged up the ingredients for people to take home and make was it soups you were telling me about?
Pizza.
Pizza, that's right. You know, people don't think about, how am I going to deliver something to my target clients or even some new clients that will take away their pain point?
Right. And what he did also, he donated 10% of his proceeds to the frontline workers. And so people went to him before they went to the other pizza place. Even if the pizza places copied him, it was too late. He did. He caught all the business. Yeah.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Hey everyone, it's Mitch, your host, and welcome to today's show. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com, or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hi, I'm Gillian, a British Canadian. I've lived in Canada for many years and also in Europe, currently living back in the UK. And I help businesses around the world with their business growth strategies, creative, very practical marketing, their content marketing. And in today's world, I help them with building business resilience because it is so important now.
Okay, Gillian, so welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming on. I know it's like 11 o'clock in the United States. So what is it, 6 hours later by you?
I'm 5 hours later, so it's 4 o'clock here in the afternoon.
Okay. All right. It's not so bad. So your day's almost over.
Well, no, there's quite a bit left.
Yeah. We have some big storms coming through today, so I don't think I'm getting out later.
Oh, dear.
Some tropical storms that are hitting the East Coast now.
Okay, we actually had some sunshine today, which was great.
Did you? I know. You don't get a lot of that in London, right? So we met through a networking meeting, really
ironically, because of coronavirus, because we would have never met if it wasn't all these Zoom meetings that everyone's doing.
Absolutely.
But I not only found your story compelling, but, you know, the things that you do and the practical suggestions you have and the things you help your clients do for small business owners, I think is really valuable to the people that listen to the podcast and follow the podcast. So maybe we could start, you know, go a little bit back, because I know you were in Canada and now you're in London and your whole background, and we'll tell your story for a little while, and then we'll get into business ideas and things like that. Does that sound good?
Yep. Okay. So, well, I was born in the UK, raised and educated here, but I did French at university. So part of me was always very European, and I've spent chunks of time in Europe in probably the last 10, 15 years teaching marketing and business strategy on various MBA programs in Holland and in Prague. But before that, I was in Canada for almost 13 years, and I worked in corporate during
Where
the first
Canada
few years. I was in Montreal, and
okay.
after a year, I was hired to a big corporate role in Toronto as director of supplier relations with a business travel company.
Okay. And do you speak fluent French?
Yes. Oui, monsieur.
Okay.
Je parle français couramment.
Not that, you know, you don't have to always speak French in Canada, but a lot of people do, especially Montreal is French Canadian, right?
Well, that was one of the attractions for me, because I thought I can use my French out there. And also it could be a strong selling point in other provinces if I'm fluently bilingual. So that was one of the motivations for going.
So you moved to Canada as an adult.
Your family relocated you. No, I was much older to move out there. But I basically had been sent to France to manage the closure of a company, and I'd been there for 18 months, but the finance director in the company back in the UK had changed. And I thought, well, the new guy doesn't know me, and he might not actually want to know me because he's got other people in corporate finance, so I need to have a plan B. And plan B was to apply to emigrate to Canada. I mean, like, you know.
But that was, you were in France.
Yeah.
Working for a UK company.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
And so I applied to.
I got to follow things. So.
I applied to emigrate to Canada, and it was approved.
Okay.
And it was kind of my insurance policy, because I knew that Canada wasn't ageist, whereas the UK is. And anyway, long story short, I did end up going out to Canada. And maybe an element of that was because a lot of people said, "Oh, you'll never go," and it was my way of saying, "Well,
I did it.
Just watch me. I'm on a plane with a one-way ticket to Montreal." So I was in Montreal for 9 months, and then I was headhunted to a job in Toronto, and I was there for 2 years. But after 9/11, they downsized the senior team, and so I went back up to Montreal. And that was really how I got into marketing, because I got hired by a not-for-profit as their marketing director.
Because you said you were in finance before that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So they were like, "Oh, you know finance, so come do our marketing." I mean, where did that come from?
Well, yeah, I was in finance, but when I was working in Toronto, I was director of supply relations. So there was an element of marketing, because
you negotiate
the deal for override commissions from airlines and hotels, but you then need your frontline staff to actually sell where you want them to sell. Because obviously if, for example, Air Canada says you can have commissions on your transatlantic flights, provided you give us the internal flights within North America, and obviously discourage people from selling onto the United States airlines,
right,
then you need to get that message out to your frontline staff. So I actually had some marketing people working for me who were constantly sending information out to the hundreds of staff across Canada who were selling business travel, providing business travel services to executives and to those executives' assistants to motivate and encourage them to, you know, push Air Canada or whatever
right.
airline.
That's when the travel
push.
Business was a more robust business than it is today.
But it wasn't so robust after 9/11, which was how I ended up leaving the job as director of supply relations to be replaced by a senior manager who cost less money. And I went back to Montreal, and I thought, well, actually, with my finance hat, business strategy fits in with all of the work I did on acquisitions for the Thomas Cook Group. It fits in with what I've been doing in Toronto for the past 2 years, because obviously marketing our services and marketing the policies that we had put in place to the frontline staff was crucial. And they then in turn needed to market to their corporate clients. And we also did events for corporate clients and things. So I thought, well, this actually is quite logical. And this not-for-profit, we're looking for a marketing director. And, you know, hey, I was prepared to work for $15 an hour. So the guy was prepared to hire me.
You worked for nothing. But you still had to make – I know this isn't about career change, but you know, that's a pivot. So you have to kind of sell yourself and say, hey, this is why I think I'm a good candidate for this job, even though this is my background, right? So you had to make that whole pitch to them.
Absolutely. And I mean, he was very keen to have somebody with my background because he was a savvy entrepreneur and he could see that I've got other skills. So in fact, I ended up director of marketing. What was I? Marketing, sales, and fundraising. And the sales was selling space in their magazine because they produced a magazine on classical music and jazz every month. And indeed, they still do. I'll give them a little plug.
So they were a
non-profit in Montreal,
for the arts, basically.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And they didn't get any funding from Canada Magazine Fund. And so their only source of income was either donations or selling ad space. And so the people that were selling the ad space worked for me.
Got it.
And I also did fundraising as well for them, so organizing gala concerts as fundraisers, et cetera, et cetera.
And you said this was in Montreal?
Yep.
Okay.
And I then did a marketing course at the university in Montreal in the evenings. So I got my certificat en gestion de marketing.
Yes, very good.
So
what's the big university there? McGill? Is that?
McGill is the main one. And then you've got the private university, Concordia.
Uh-huh.
But in the French-speaking world, the University of Montreal is really big on sciences, medicines, and they've got the business school, L'École des Études Commerciales, which is a very prestigious business school. I think in terms of MBAs, it's in the top five in Canada.
So it was University of Montreal that you got your certificate at?
It was, yes.
Okay, very good. Because I know McGill is very large. It's like 70,000 students, right? It's very big. Yeah.
And I was teaching one course at McGill, I was teaching business startups how to get business ideas, evaluate them, and get them to launch, which was a program I developed to sell online, and it was identified by McGill, and they invited me to teach it live, so I taught it live twice a year for about 3 or 4 years.
So you're an adjunct professor. They use that term up there, too?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you got a lot of things going on. You're building your career in marketing now.
Very much, yes.
Yeah.
Although I'm flirting with the idea at the moment of trying to also help businesses become more resilient, because that there's the marketing element of that, because you need to know your market, you need to know your target clients, you need to be communicating with them, you need them to be interacting with you so you're getting feedback, you know what they need,
right,
what they want. You also need a very robust financial control of your business, because if you don't have those things in place, it's very, very hard when times get rough and you need to perhaps pivot.
Well, I think that what's going on now with the pandemic and everything brings your point home, right? A lot of small business owners don't think that way. They should, but they don't. They don't listen to us half the time. Now they're like, oh, maybe
they're crying
you're right.
In the fear, yeah.
Yeah. Now necessity is the mother of invention, right? You have to be resilient. This will happen again. So then the question is, how are you prepared next time, and how you are going to listen to your clients and then figure out how your customers want to do business with you, not how you want to do business with them. I think the people that were resilient just by nature, they're the ones that made the pivot now very quickly.
Absolutely.
But most small business owners are not. They're, you know.
I mean, in this area, I mean, in the town that I'm currently living in, which as a courtesy to it, I perhaps will choose not to name, there were businesses that could have pivoted and they didn't.
Right.
So, for example, there's a wool shop and they closed their doors. And I happened to be walking up the town after they were allowed to reopen and saw the owner and said, "Bet you're glad to be open again." He said, "Yes." I said, "So when you're in closed down, what were you doing? Were you selling online?" "Oh, we weren't set up for it."
Yeah.
I said, "Oh, it only takes a few hours to do a website, and you could have done, you know, kits. You could have done a sewing kit."
So you spend a whole day, let's say, doing it, right? What does it matter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you don't even need to spend the day doing it. You sell it first. And then when somebody buys it, you go and get the size 8 knitting pins. You get the, I was going to say recipe, you get the knitting pattern for it, and you put the wool in the thing. And you.
Is that what it is? It's a yarn store where they're selling.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, for people that want to knit on their own.
Yeah, so you can knit a sweater, a cardigan, socks,
gloves,
whatever.
It's not finished goods. They're selling the raw materials.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and,
right. So you
know, people are on lockdown. People are on lockdown. They are bored.
Right.
You know, you clear the closets and the cupboards and you clean the shelves and you do the garden and then it's like, oh, what am I going to do next?
Yeah.
And this is not a town where there's loads and loads of places to walk for miles, so that people get bored. So, you know, why not learn to knit or go back to knitting if you haven't done it for years?
There's all that stuff going on, right?
Yeah.
You know what my daughter did yesterday? She comes in, she goes, "Look what I learned, Daddy." She's taking a course or reading about sign language. She's 14 years old. And now she's signing to me because she thinks it's important to learn how to communicate with people that have trouble communicating. She's every day she comes down with something else she learns. Yeah, isn't it?
I think that's absolutely wonderful.
You can all do it on your own.
But also your daughter could be really handy for people that are putting out videos for their marketing, that she could be in the corner signing for people that actually don't get the video at all because they can't hear it.
I better tell her to practice then. She could do her name right now. That's pretty funny. But yeah, I think there's a lot of local, I mean, you really are on boots on the ground, you know, working with really the kind of people that I do a lot of business with, which are local, you know, store owners and shopkeepers and, you know, people that never really thought about, I mean, they go, they turn their lights on every day, right? They unlock the door, they flip the sign from closed to open and, you know, and they do some marketing, but they, I mean, this was a real challenge for a lot of these people. So are they, but they're open, they're back open. They didn't go out of business, right?
They're back open, but, you know, will people be rushing back in to buy walls and stuff? Because they might take the view now that, oh, I've developed a new hobby. I don't need to buy walls anymore. Who knows?
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I mean, I don't know whether you want to go there with me, but I have got a few examples of organizations that have pivoted and they've actually been very successful. So the one thing you don't know about me, I actually do storytelling.
Oh, you didn't tell me that when we spoke.
No. Okay. Not paid, but
you had to save something for the podcast. You couldn't tell me everything.
Exactly. So, you know, like people will gather in a pub and people will tell stories. And there was North London Storytelling Circle. I've never actually been to it live, but I knew of its existence and always hoped that one day I would go when I was in London. Anyways, they decided to pivot and go online.
Right.
And they have actually gone from being, apparently they were 6 or 7 people that would meet once a month in somebody's home and they would each tell a story.
Okay.
And now they have got, well, the other night, on Thursday night, there was over 50 people on the Zoom call from all over the world.
Yeah.
And they had paid to be on that call. Typically on a Thursday night, it was free to begin with. Then the lady introduced donation basis, which was very smart. And then she decided to start inviting in well-known storytellers that obviously would require a fee, but charging people to participate. So, you know, you do the math, you've got 50 people on the call at £10 a head.
Sure.
That's £500 and split it with the guy that's turned up. You've just made some money. And she's decided that, yes, she might do some live storytelling going forward, but she will continue to do the Zoom.
So is this like an open mic night or are they bringing in professional storytellers?
On Thursday night, they had a professional one,
okay,
which is why she was charging so much for people to attend. But otherwise, it's open mic and you can simply say in advance, I'd like to tell. So I've told 2 or 3 times now in the last 4 months.
What kind of stories do you tell, Jillian? Are they fictional stories? Are they?
They're fictional. They're myths, legends.
Okay.
So
that you make up, or they're myth and legend you do research on?
They're usually ones from books. Okay. So you know, the Cellar of Wisdom.
Got
the king looked from the castle,
and you're reading the passage from. Got it.
Okay. You don't read. You tell the story.
That's different.
You absolutely do not read.
Okay. That's a different
thing. That is totally outlawed. You have to tell the story.
Okay.
Which is great because you can kind of embellish it as you go, shorten it or add bits to it.
I'll have to listen in one time. I don't know if I want to tell a story.
I've got three. Well, you can come in on Thursday night if you like. I'll send you the link. But also, I've got 3 of the ones that I've told up on my YouTube channel. So I'll
send good. Okay. Well, we'll put a link to those in the show notes.
But also, I mean, organizations that have pivoted, there was a cafe in a seaside town near here, and they became the gourmet cocktail bar. And what they've basically done is put a big sign outside, and they've got a table there, and you can go up to the table and you can buy cocktails and take them away in a biodegradable container and drink your cocktail socially distanced from everybody. A lot of the others just simply stayed closed.
Right.
Local garden center, yes, they sell a lot of stuff other than just plants, and so all of that did go on close down. But they had plants that they would have to have otherwise thrown away.
Right.
So they were putting packages together. So for £40, you could have like 60 different vegetable plants and 2 great big, what we call grow bags, which are great big bags of soil and compost, and it's delivered to your door.
Yeah,
and they
perfect.
Got hundreds and hundreds of people thinking, well, great, I haven't got to drive to the garden center.
I haven't
got
grow
to lift
my own
stuff
vegetables.
In and out of the car. Yeah. And people had time to grow vegetables. And also people, frankly, were getting it at the very beginning of lockdown, nervous that the shops would run out of stocks, that the shops would close down. People were stripping the shelves bare.
Right.
So having your own vegetables
was a safety
mechanism.
They were fighting over toilet paper here.
Well, they were here. I mean, you know, the toilet paper was the end joke. There's toilet rolls at this shop. Let's go and get them. But no, people were stocking up on things to make bread and people started to get into growing vegetables. But that was smart of them because in doing that, yes, they offloaded a lot of the plants that they would have had to have thrown away. But in addition, they had some income that probably covered fixed costs. I hope for their sake it did. but they've probably got customers that they would not have had before.
Right. They're building a customer base.
So you've got a newer customer base now.
Right.
Not just the people that have known you for years and go there all the time.
Right.
You've got new people coming on board. You know, a book club I'm in, we were on a Zoom call and we were talking about vegetables, and this was how I heard about it and went and checked it online. But the other people were checking it, and I'm sure they passed the information on to other people, people who perhaps don't drive, that they're older and they still do a garden, but they don't drive anymore.
Right.
Wouldn't have thought about this. So it was a smart way to for the garden center to get visibility and also to build some new clients.
Did they think of that on their own, or was that with your help?
I was not involved in it. I cannot take credit for it.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. But yeah, that's a big problem, I think, of their inventory's wasting if they have perishable inventory. And, you know, a lot of the restaurants even here, they were getting all geared up to open. Now you can go inside, and then the governor shut it down. Mm. And they had extra food. They had staff they had hired. They had to lay them off.
Well, it's the same here. I mean, we threw the pubs wide open again. The landlords all bought more beer. And food, I guess, as well. And then some of them had somebody phone in and say, oh, actually, I was in your pub the other night and I've been diagnosed positive with COVID-19. So the pub's all closed down again. Ugh. So, you know, all of that food has to be thrown out.
Yeah.
And all of this takes us back to marketing, because marketing, as you know, you don't need me to tell you, isn't just about promotion. Marketing is also about how do you get your products to the people that need them. How can you solve people's pain? How can you take that pain away? How can you be a solution to them? But I think a lot of smaller businesses think of marketing purely as, oh, I need to be on Facebook, Instagram, or I need to be in the press, or I don't do anything, whatever.
Right.
But they don't seem to think about the other elements of it. So what is my product or service, and what does it do for that other person?
Right.
Does it delight them? Does it take away a pain? Does it solve the problem? If I'm open until 9 at night and I'm selling flowers, and the guy's late home and wants to appease his wife, he can drop in and buy some flowers. Or maybe, you know, people don't think also during a lockdown, just because I'm a cafe and you can't come to me, perhaps I could come to you, or maybe we could do a curbside delivery.
Yeah.
And I think you were talking to me about a guy who packaged up the ingredients for people to take home and make was it soups you were telling me about?
Pizza.
Pizza, that's right.
Right.
You know, people don't think about how am I going to deliver something to my target clients or even some new clients that will take away their pain point.
Right. And what he did also, he donated 10% of his proceeds to the frontline workers. And so people went to him before they went to the other pizza place. Even if the pizza places copied him, it was too late. He caught all the business.
Yeah.
I think people miss out, Jillian, that you know, there's advertising and promotion, and marketing's a broader topic, and people they miss that.
Yeah, and if you talk to them about the four Ps like you would on an MBA program, they glaze over and think, oh, don't speak academic to me. But the four Ps are important. You know, what is your product or service? Who wants it?
Right.
You might know somebody needs something, but if they don't want it, they will not spend money for it.
Right.
Even you know,
if
I
they
know
need
that,
it, you're right.
Yeah, I know as a small business, you need to worry about your finances and you need my program. But if you don't want it, I can market to you till the cows come home and you will not be buying.
Right. That's true.
How is it priced? Is it priced at a reasonable price for that person to buy? Or do I need to actually price it a lot higher than I might be comfortable with simply because this is a price that everybody else is charging?
Right.
And if mine is a lot less, people might be suspicious that it's not such a good service or not such a good product.
Yeah. People don't realize that just competing on price sometimes demeans your product. And people are like, well, that can't be real if it's that cheap. There's got to be something wrong there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But also, you don't want to price it high on profit. I mean, I can think of one place that actually pushed all their prices up and they started to do takeout during lockdown. Well, that was a bit tacky in my view.
Yeah.
Maybe add on a premium and say, would you like to make a contribution towards the cost of us delivering it to you or something like that, or charge a delivery fee?
There were some places here that were adding like COVID pricing, like they were increasing the price based on their increased costs. And I think that's a really fine line. You got to be real careful. Mm. Like you said, if you make it voluntary, like, can you help us? Mm. That's different than saying, oh, well, our costs are increasing. We're going to have to pass that on to you. And I think it really turns people off sometimes. You've got to be careful.
See, this is also why you really need to know who your clients are, who your target clients are, and what makes them tick, what's their buying behavior. Because actually, you might actually be able to be honest with them and say, look, you know, because of COVID, my costs have gone up considerably. And regrettably, I have had to uplift my prices, but we will go back to the former prices as soon as, you know, things are looking a lot better for us. And we hope that you feel comfortable bearing with us. And if you do have an issue, then tell us and we will allow you 10% off at the till point. And you get more credibility if you're honest.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you look like you're just trying to pass things on to people and you're not saying, explaining why.
It looks like you're trying to profit from a bad situation and people don't like that. And, you know, it's an old adage, but people buy from those that they know, like, and trust, and they buy products that they know, like, and trust. So you need visibility, you need credibility for you and for your products and services. And you need to have consistent messaging, and it needs to be very clear. And if you do that throughout the entire year, when things get a bit rocky because of COVID or whatever else might come and as a curveball into our lives, you've got those people on board already.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. And you know how to continue. And also, you know, you don't just close a shop or a cafe or a hairdresser and write, that's it, or go home or come back in a month, 2 months, whenever. Put a nice notice in the window that's very visible, very clear, and say, we are closed. We're not able to help you at the moment, but if you want advice on how to cut your hair, we've got some videos on YouTube. This is the link. And why not use a QR code so that people can get their smartphone out and they get immediately to your web address. You don't have to take a photo of it and then key it in when they get home.
Yeah, make it easy for them to connect with you.
Or you could offer a different service and maybe something that's quite different. You know, I mean, this yarn shop could perhaps have done videos showing people how to knit.
Right.
And then they might even have attracted clients from around the world that maybe wouldn't be buying the yarns from them, but might be actually buying the knitting patterns from them. You could start a knitting pattern club.
You could be selling internationally, sure. Yeah. A lot of the smart salons did what you said, where they're putting on videos. They even did Zoom calls with clients that were nervous to have them come even to their backyard. And they would say, okay, well, let me tell you how to cut your husband's hair without cutting his ears off. You know? And some of them didn't, though. A lot of them didn't do that, but it's not so hard to do nowadays. You could just get on the call and show them how to do it, you know? It's a lot of pivoting.
And also, I mean, you need to be coherent. You know, there's a wedding dress shop in town. It's very, very elegant with an elegant dress in the window. And they had a notice in the side window that was handwritten, not terribly legible. And they've been stuck on with masking tape. And I'm like,
just doesn't look, doesn't have to be that
tacky way,
right? Yeah.
So everything needs to be consistent. So if you're up market, everything has to be up market. It doesn't have to be printed by, you know, the Queen Stationers, but at least make it look coherent with the brand that you're trying, or the image of the brand that you want to portray.
Right. Yeah. And it's not hard to do, right? We have printers. You don't have to like hire a printing company to do all this stuff. Yeah. You can just do simple things. But a lot of people do lazy stuff and they just stick it in the window, and then it just gives the wrong impression. You know, it
looks sloppy and also, frankly, if it's your own business, wouldn't you be stopping by every few days to make sure that it was secure, and therefore wouldn't you notice that your notice in the window had actually faded in the sun and actually replace it?
They're probably like, oh yeah, we need to replace that,
but like, okay, fine, that's it. And I guess they either went home and did the garden or cried in their beer or whatever they did, and presumably forgot all about their business.
Yeah, probably. A lot of people.
I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
It was just remarkable that they weren't making the effort when, in fact, it was a great opportunity. And I think those that grabbed the opportunity, like the lady I'm telling you about from the Storytelling Club, I'm sure her motive to begin with was purely to be able to still tell stories and to help storytellers still have the opportunity to tell theirs.
Right.
And then I guess over time she saw that there was a business opportunity here, and very, not delicately, but what's the word I want? You know, it was gentle the way she did it. So we moved from free to donation based, and then for professional storytellers, then there was a fee, and you can't come in if you haven't paid the fee.
Right.
And I'm sure she'll continue this as a business opportunity, and she's starting to give online courses in how to be a storyteller.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
So, but it doesn't feel as if she said, oh, there's an emergency, I can profit from this, I can make money from this. It was done in a very refined kind of way.
Yeah, it was very innocuous. It was very helpful in learning. It's an interesting topic, right? So I'm sure there's plenty of people, if it wasn't expensive or they could try it, you know, for free, they kind of slide their way in and get involved in her community.
And there's another one who's more well known called Shona Lee, and she has a 3-year program that's residential, I think once every one of the 3 years, and with work to do online in between time. But she actually decided to go online and did a 4-week taster of the course. So every Monday evening, she was there for 3 hours. It was paid, but at a very affordable fee. So that she could, obviously, it's another way of marketing, because marketing isn't just being on Facebook or Instagram. It can actually be running a free or inexpensive course online, or a sure. challenge, or yeah. a webinar.
Webinar, right. And especially now, it's easy. It's easy
yeah. to do. And it's a live great way for people. Yeah. It's a great way for people to get to know, like, and trust you. And also, people that might have been in the past reluctant to do an online course, because now they've had to Zoom for everything, people are much more inclined to do online courses.
Right.
They're more comfortable clicking yeah. on a link and appearing in a Zoom thing.
Yeah, they're getting used to that.
I mean, think about these networking things where we met. If Sonny had proposed that a few years ago, probably it would have fallen on deaf ears. Whereas now, I'm hoping that will continue.
I'm sure it will.
It's fantastic to be in England, and I can speak to people in North America. I think there was somebody on the Friday night one that came in from Italy.
Yeah, Italy and Hungary. And yeah, Anita was from Hungary, and Eleonora was from Italy. And I'm sure, I would hope Geraldine's going to continue to run that group. I want to go to it every week. Some of my groups have cut down as many meetings that they're having, but they're still having meetings. Most of my meetings are not local. They're in Florida. Mm-hmm. They're in Toronto. They're in London.
And now a word from our sponsors. NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. It's everything you need to market online, and it's totally automated. Build custom websites, optimize them for Google rankings, and automatically create ads and social media posts to drive the most traffic to your sites. Their fully integrated system generates regular email newsletters, manages all your customers and prospects, and provides up-to-date marketing analytics. NowSite. You do your thing, and we'll do the marketing. Use our affiliate link in the show notes to learn more about NowSite and how it can help your business. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable, and most of all, help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's LAW to 21000. Or follow our link in the show notes to learn how you can get this valuable tool for you and your company. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their link in our show notes to learn more and get connected with Fetch. And now back to our show.
Most of my meetings are not local. They're in Florida. Mm-hmm. They're in Toronto. They're in London. It's interesting. You're building a community and friends and relationships with people all around the world. I think it's an ironic silver lining to what's going on, you know, like the world's more connected than it was, even though we're still all kind of struggling.
And I also think that type of networking thing, and again, networking is part of your marketing. It is part of promoting your business, whether you're doing it offline or online.
Yeah.
I have never really been overly comfortable at offline networking events, because you're kind of there with a glass of wine in one hand and food in the other, and you haven't got the third hand for business cards and the fourth one to shake somebody's hand. But you don't have to trouble with any of these things when it's online. And I also think when you're in these breakout groups of just 5 or 6 people, even if you're reluctant to do networking in the pre-COVID times when you would do it offline, and a lot of business owners are reluctant, that, you know, they run a business, but they're actually quite shy of going in and meeting people.
Or
they don't want other people to try and sell them their businesses and their products and services, because they're uncomfortable with that. I think in these rooms, because there's a question that you need to answer, like what was the best thing that happened to you this week, or what did you learn this week?
Right. There's mixer questions, right?
Yeah. And I'm sure you've been in groups where we've all met before. We don't need to tell each other what we do, because we know already.
Right.
And we talk about, what are you doing for July 4th weekend? And then you get into a whole different discussion about, well, are the restaurants open? Are the hotels open? What are they doing? So you actually get to know that person a lot better.
Yeah, very much so. I think it's also more Yeah, you're more focused on the conversation between you and the people on the call and why you're there and to get to know each other, as opposed to, and I go to a lot of networking events. I mean, I'm like, my schedule is crazy. And even pre-COVID, but you know, I have to travel to go to these things. So I would go into rooms with people I didn't know and I'd walk up and meet them and I never had a problem. But a lot of people are, oh, why don't you come with me? Go to these events. Ah, I don't really know. I don't want to do that. I'm like, well, you got to meet people. You know, there's marketing and there's networking.
Yeah.
You know, you build your networks to create relationships and then you market to those people and other people and so forth. But you have to do both. I mean, you can't just sit around and put billboards on the highway and hope people come by, you know?
And also, if you network, it's a great way, if you've built relationships with people, to be able to run a new idea by them and say, you know what, you know me for marketing, but how would you react if I said I was thinking about actually doing X, Y, and Z? What do you think about it?
Right.
And you can get some, they may not be your target clients, but they are nonetheless seasoned business owners who would have an opinion that would be worth hearing, because it might send you off on another track. It might make you formulate some different questions that you want to ask other people. And of course, talking about questions, if you want to know about your target clients, one way to find out is to actually do a questionnaire.
Yeah.
Which you can promote on Facebook, on LinkedIn.
Right, like a survey, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And find out, you know, like my idea for resilience, I shall put up a questionnaire on LinkedIn and say to people, would you fill this in? Because I'd like to know what you observed either in your own business or in businesses that you know, who pivoted and how did they pivot? And was it successful? And why do you think it was successful? Or why do you know it was successful? How many businesses do you know that you feel really are resilient? And if they are, in what way? So it's important to know your customers. And often people make assumptions. They assume that they know what somebody wants.
All the time. And they're usually wrong.
Yeah.
They're usually wrong. I want to go back, though, before we get into
this stuff.
We were in the middle of your story. I think I interrupted you.
You need to keep me under control. You know,
yeah, but we were talking because it all leads up to all the great ideas and the things that you do for people. You were in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
You got this new job marketing and you became an adjunct. Well, first you got your certificate in business marketing and then you became an adjunct at the local university.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's – and you just started this job. So where were we?
So then my dad passed away in 2005. And so at that point, I knew that I was going to be spending bigger chunks of time in the UK. I'd always gone back 3 or 4 times a year, but now I was going back for a month or 2 months. And that was when I started to seek teaching opportunities in universities in Holland and in Czech Republic.
Okay.
And when I also started to develop a suite of online programs. And that was where one of them got picked up by McGill, and so I ended up teaching it live. I mean, again, you need to be willing
online.
To pivot. And be, no, I was teaching it live at McGill.
Oh,
was
you went be, back to Canada?
Well, I was still at this point in Canada. I left Canada in 2012, but in 2005 I was still in Canada, but needing to spend chunks of time, lengthy chunks of time with my mum.
In the UK. In England. Okay.
Yeah. So that was when I started to get teaching gigs at universities in, as I say, Holland and Prague.
Well, why Holland and Prague? You could go for the day to Holland and teach and come back and see your mom at night?
No, I was going over for the weekend or for a week or for 2 or 3 weeks.
It was just short courses.
Well, you know, some of these MBA programs, there's 2 6-hour sessions a week, or like one of the universities in Prague, they did their bachelor's course over weekends. So I'd go out for a weekend and then maybe I'd teach at the other university during the week and then that one at the weekends.
Then you come back
for
a period of time.
Yeah, but it meant that I was earning an income while I was hanging out with my mom. So mom had got me around and I was kind of local, if you like, not the other side of the Atlantic.
Right, a little bit
closer. But I was still earning a living and I was still maintaining my professional credibility within business strategy and marketing.
That's what you're teaching, business strategy and marketing.
Yeah.
Okay.
As separate courses.
Right.
And then I developed a suite of programs that I had every intention of selling online. And one of them was noticed by the head of continuing studies at McGill, who asked me if I would be willing to teach it live. So I ended up teaching it live twice a year at McGill for about 3 or 4 years.
How long was the course?
The first time we ran it, we did it as a 1-week intensive. Then we decided to do it as 1 evening a week for 4 weeks with 2 Saturdays full time. just to play around with it and see what sold the best.
Right.
And in fact, it was the 1 week full time that sold the best.
Oh, people wanted the intensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was semi-workshop. It wasn't just me standing there spouting. They were actually getting on and doing. So they were actually sort of, you know, investigating the market within which their business would operate and writing questionnaires and going out and getting answers and also looking at what money they would need to start the business and, you know, running some of the numbers to see what their break-even point was.
So were these were people that not only had business ideas to start businesses, but some of them had businesses already?
No, none of them had businesses.
They were all people students.
They weren't students. They were people of all ages. They were people from mid-20s up to sort of 50-odd. Okay. And they were people that wanted to start a business.
Got it. So they're looking. Okay. So they're learning and doing their research. And
yeah. So some of them had no idea what they wanted to do. So they'd do my idea generator course first. And those that knew what they wanted to do or thought they did would come in and they would do my From Idea to Launch program. But often as they went through it, they would realize that actually this is going to require way too much money and I wouldn't have access to that level of financing.
Yes.
Or maybe the break-even point is not going to be reached for several years. Maybe this isn't what I want to be doing.
Right. No, that's the whole concept of the accidental entrepreneur. People don't go through those steps at the beginning. They discover it by accident. And then they realize, oh, my great idea shouldn't be a business, or I'm not the person to do it. Or like you said, it's too long to the break-even point where I'm now in the black and out of the red.
Or they don't have the skill set. I mean, there was a guy in Montreal who...
They don't have the skill set. Yeah, yeah, that's a big one.
He wanted me to help him with a business plan, and he was going to open a cafe targeting a specific client base. And in the course of asking him key questions, he drew the conclusion that actually, maybe this isn't a good idea, because he actually had never worked in a restaurant ever. And he hadn't realized that working in a restaurant isn't you rock up at sort of, 6 o'clock at night and unlock the door and go home at 11.
Right.
You've probably been to the market first and
how about 6 a.m.
everything and you've
then
had
you
to
close
clean
it too. Right. Exactly. Yeah. The restaurant business is very time consuming. But I agree. And that I always tell people, listen, if it's something you're really passionate about, you want to do, maybe you can get a partner to join you, somebody who does have experience, but you better figure that out early on or else you're going to be in trouble.
But it's also people that decide they're going to do an online course and they're horrified, absolutely mortified if I say to them, don't create the course before you've sold it. And they're like, oh, well, I've got to create the course. No, create module one, part one.
Okay.
And sell it. And if somebody buys it, then while they're doing their part one of module one, you're busy building the other parts of module one.
Right. What are you going to build? 8-part course and nobody's buying it.
Exactly.
Just wasted a lot of time.
So I hope nobody from McGill is going to be listening to this, because the lady there is still there and she might be horrified when she hears me say this. But when she actually said to me, would you teach this course offline? And I agreed to it. I actually only had one small segment of the course because I was waiting to see if it sold.
Yeah.
So I had to go in and teach it. I think it was about less than a month later. And this was the first time it was going to be a full week. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how am I actually going to get all of this stuff done? So I worked like crazy. I mean, I really worked really hard for those weeks to put together a full-time one-week course that had sold to the tune of $1,000 a day. So it was quite lucrative. It was worth doing this.
Right.
But I actually hadn't got the course. I'd only got the first little bit in case somebody bought it online.
That's funny. People
are quite horrified. And it's like, no, don't do that. Because if people don't want it, if you've misread your market.
Right.
Do a 5-day challenge using a Facebook group and, give value, but, have elements of it that people will perhaps need more guidance on so that you can then do an upsell, that they can hire you to help them with it. But don't assume that people are going to want what you think you know they want, because it's probably what you know they need, but if they don't recognize that need, they won't be paying for it.
It's common television shows, they'll pitch a show for a pilot. They don't have any of the other shows ready, and they don't even know if it's going to be successful. So even if the thing gets picked up and they're like, okay, well, we want 6 more episodes. They don't have any. Yeah. Seinfeld was like that. They had no episodes. They just wrote them every week and they went crazy. But that's the nature of, you don't write 22 episodes for a season of the show that you might think may never get picked up and waste all of your time and effort and energy and focus. there's a lot to be said for what it takes out of you to create a, you know, creating a course. I don't have a course, but I have friends and people that there's a lot of work involved. You got to record the videos. You got to make the materials. You got to have stuff for people. It's got to look professional. Something to be said for making it up as you go along. That's not a bad technique. It's just like you said, you're kind of feeling out the market, feeling out your customers, because you may also discover that what you thought was right, like you said, you're going to have to like pivot the course a little bit for their what they need. What you thought they needed wasn't what they need. So you might have to adjust as you go.
And what you can do is do it as a challenge and ask the feedback on it. Or you can even say...
Challenges are a good idea, yeah.
Or you could actually sell it as a beta course on donation with a minimum, say, of, I don't know, $20.
Right.
So if everybody pays you $20 and you've got, you know, 10 people on it, well, okay,
you've covered some of your
bucks,
time, right.
You know, you've got some money coming in. But the crucial thing is, if you like it, give me a testimonial. And if you weren't happy with it, tell me in detail why you were not happy with it.
Right. And learn from people.
Yeah, I mean, if only one person out of 20 people says, I didn't like X, Y, Z, then maybe you can discount it. But if 18 out of 20 people say, well, I didn't understand this particular element, or I didn't really get what you were talking about, or whatever, then you know you've got a problem and you need to fix that up.
And you don't want to find that after you've done 8 courses and you're trying to figure out why nobody took, you know, 4 through 8.
Mm. And also it's crucial if you sell a course that a significant number of people do that course, so they will then say that was a great course. They'll talk to their friends about it. They'll give you a testimonial. You don't want them to buy it, not like it, park it, and then, oh, well, you know, that person doesn't write very good courses, because that damages your reputation.
Right, because then it's hard to undo that after you go down that road. Now, I see you have a lot of creative ideas and a lot of, you know, you see a lot of things. You think that's because of all the teaching you've done and the people you've interacted with and the testing and the, you know, coming across all these different business ideas. I mean, you almost educated yourself while you're educating other people through the process.
I guess I've always been a bit creative and thought laterally. I mean, I am creative in the strict sense of the word, as in sort of, you know, arts and crafts and stuff. My mum was a painter and things. So I think I've always sort of seen something different. And
because you don't think of people in finance as the most creative. I hate to insult my friends, but as the most creative people around.
Yeah, but you know what? People think they're not. And there's a whole thing I could talk to you about on creative. So perhaps I'll just tell you this one.
That's another episode.
Well, can I just tell you this one?
Yeah, please.
When I was teaching sector analysis at the University of Montreal, which is all about analyzing a market, and I had not decided the syllabus, and the syllabus included something called creativity. Okay. And I said to the students, are you creative? Oh, no, we're not creative. And I said, fine. So I had 40 students, and I handed around 40 pieces of paper, which I had drawn a little squiggle on.
They thought they were creative?
They thought they were not.
I
said, right, you have got 15 minutes to draw me a picture. And you can imagine these MBA students that paid good money to be on an MBA program wondered why the heck they were having
to do an artwork now.
And I had been to the dollar store and I'd bought lots of colored crayons and things. So I handed all of these out and I don't know, maybe they accepted it because they thought they'd just got this sort of mad professor from England or something. I don't know. But anyway, after 15 minutes, I stopped them and I said, right, hold up your pictures. And what was really interesting was, one, they had all done pictures, some because it did look a bit like a river had done the sort of the house trees and the river.
Okay.
But most of them out of the 40 had actually kept it vertical as I'd handed it to them. It was only one or two that turned it upside down, diagonally or across. But the point that I was making is,
because you gave them a page, a white page with a squiggle line on it, and that was it.
Yeah, I'd drawn a squiggle on this page. I'd photocopied it 40 times and I handed it out so that you had it in portrait.
Okay.
And it was up to them if they went landscape diagonal or turned it upside down. And I didn't suggest that to them. It's up to them.
It's an exercise in creativity. So
the point I was making to them and succeeded in making was, what's all this rubbish about you're not creative? Because you have just been creative.
Yeah.
And you need to have ideas. If you're going to start a business, you need to understand the options in front of you.
Right.
And when you market that business, you need to be more creative. Think about something, because your unique selling proposition may not be actually your product or service. It might actually be the way in which you get it into the customer's hands, the way you distribute it to them.
Right.
Or it may be the way in which you actually promote it so that they become aware of it.
Right.
So, you know, if you're a barber shop and it's wintertime and the door's closed and you've got a crowded window that people don't actually realize that you're a barber shop, have an A board outside. Have a special event. Have mulled wine and mince pies at Christmas. Have sangria in the summer. Right. Do something special if you're in America on July 4th, or something special when it's Super Bowl or whatever.
Yeah.
Art gallery. Well, you've got all that space and people come in and they look at paintings and they go out again. But how about having a fashion show? And people come in, bring in young designers to do a fashion show. And while the people are there looking at the fashion show,
they see the paintings.
They see the paintings. But you also bring in the local caterer that wants to start a bit, or has just started a business, or wants to promote their business doing, you know, in-home catering for special events, canapes and such like. Maybe the local wine shop could bring some wines along. Maybe they'll let you have them at cost, but then they get the promotion. Oh, and while we're at it, let's get the press to come along, because actually it's in a really nice Georgian house and we've got paintings on the wall and we've got some of the artists there. We've got young fashion designers. We've got wine. We've got, you know, nice things to eat. Everybody gets mentioned in the press article. So it's a win-win-win for everybody.
Right, but a lot of people think vertically. They don't
cost
think
very much.
You know, I'll tell you a good story. There's a guy who's on my podcast. His name is Lou DiMartino. You can look him up. Mm. And he's got a business called, it's either Pour and Petal or Pet. I think it's Pour and Petal. Mm-hmm. So they were very interested. He and his partner were interested in wine and wineries. And they decided, you know, people, the wineries need people to come and see their wineries in New Jersey and in Long Island. And they started this bike tour company that would, you know, you go with your spouse or your significant other and you get on the bike and you bike to a couple of different wineries and the wineries love it because you buy their wine or whatever. But then they realized that, well, we have different changes in seasons here. What are we going to do to help these people and to keep the business going in the off season? So they decided to have an event, you know, like a festival type of a thing, right, where they could sell tables and the winery would come because they're not open in the wintertime. You wouldn't go there. And then they realized that the cheese people wanted to come and the cracker people wanted to come and all these other people wanted to come. And they realized that that business was more lucrative than the other business because there was all these people who were paying for all these tables. And it's just, you know, it was kind of a thinking outside the box type of thing. What do we do, like you said, when we can't do business the tradition, the regular
way?
Call it the regular way. I don't know what that means, but.
But, you know, I think also it's good to think about how the press might be interested in you to try and get written about. You know, a journalist wants something that's interesting. So maybe, you know, you could be the refugee that's arrived in Canada or wherever. And you know, I don't know, maybe when you were back home, you were a pediatrician or an oncologist or something. I mean, you can't work in that field anymore, but you've come up with a really great business idea, which really helps other people, or something that would make it newsworthy.
Right. And, yeah, and then you get free public publicity.
Yeah. And if you're not newsworthy, then align yourself with somebody who is.
Right.
So if somebody wants somebody to sponsor them, you know, the local kids frisbee team or something, have your name on the back of their t-shirts and pay for all of their t-shirts for the season.
Right.
It doesn't have to cost a fortune.
No, there's ways to do things that are PR related that are inexpensive and good for the community and sends a good message and puts you in good thoughts with people. Like the guy with the pizza, he's selling these pizza kits and, you know, fine. Okay. You're getting pizza, you're at home, whatever. But then he added the part that, you know, we'll give money to the frontline workers and then a local produce delivery box company, which my son actually drives the truck, one of the trucks for. She delivers fresh produce to people's houses. So she partnered with him, providing vegetables to people and things like that. And her business has been booming because then she said, well, people need other things. So she's delivering milk and eggs and pastas. And a lot of the farms that normally would sell to restaurants now have all this produce that they can't sell to restaurants. So her business has been booming and people are getting vegetables and stuff directly at home they never got. So, yeah, I mean, the ones that are really pivoting are collaborative thinkers. How can we work together to make this better for people than not?
Yeah, and also if you know, retail outlets and shops and that collaborate, then it can actually be something that draws people into the town. So maybe bookshops sometimes can languish a bit. But if you could actually arrange
an
that
event
you're going to get
out of it, right?
Well, you can get some cakes maybe from the local cake shop and you offer them to people when they come into your bookshop. So you can sit down, have a cup of coffee and a piece of cake. You're not turning yourself into a cafe. You're not competing with the ones up the road. You're up front where you've got the cakes from.
Right.
So if people like them, then they can go up the road to the cake shop and buy another one to take home.
Right.
But at least it means that people might sit around a bit longer and look at the books and then decide to buy.
Yeah, I mean, their problem right now is you can't go in the bookstore. But
yeah.
You can do it out on the street when it's nice. But that'll change.
I mean, there was one shop in town that they would take a cake and cut it up and bring it out into the street, not just stand outside their door. They would actually walk down through the street and say, would you like to try some of this?
Yeah, that's brilliant. But it seems so simple, but people don't do the simple things that you look around and you spout out 10 things that a local shop can be doing, and they don't do it.
Well, this barber shop that is in a town near to here, I wrote a blog post about how to market your barber shop or hairdressers. And I rather pointedly said, by the way, I was inspired to write this. I said, you might want to check it out. And I gave
him
the link to it.
He inspired you to write it.
Yeah, I mean, seeing what they weren't doing inspired me to write about what they should do.
Right, there you go.
And so it was actually a young girl, and I went in and saw her, and I said, I was concerned about your barbershop, I said, and it inspired me to write a blog post. I said, I'd like to share it with you. This is the link if you'd like to read it. And I said, if you want any help with marketing, give me a call. And I left because I didn't want her to feel in any way intimidated or that I was trying to sell her something. Now, whether she looked at my blog post or not, I've no idea. But the only thing she actually did do that I suggested was put an A board outside. So I like to think that it actually had the courage.
But she never called you, never reached out to you.
No, but I think that's a syndrome of smaller towns sometimes, that people want something for free or for cheap.
Right, maybe.
But I think also people can't be bothered. It's like, you know, that same town, it's by the sea and it goes dead in the winter months. And a lot of the shops just close down. Or they just sit there not doing very much trade, and there's so many things that they actually could do.
Sure, be creative about it.
Yeah, I mean,
do they, or is it common over there, you go into a store or a cafe or something, they have like a little fishbowl, like a little bowl, right? You put your business card in or something.
No.
And you win. They don't do that over there?
No.
Okay, so over here what they'll do is they'll often put out a bowl, and you put the bowl in, you'll win something.
Yeah.
A free sandwich, a free shake,
hairdressers could do it.
Right,
a free
stylist or a free coloring or something like that. So there was this local, it was a sandwich shop, basically a cafe, and they sold smoothies, like, you know, all the healthy stuff. And I guess they had some other things. And then they also had lunch. So we went in there, I think it was with my father, and they had this bowl, and I dropped my card in there. And I said to my dad, betcha we never hear from them. And he says, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, somebody will win the lunch, but I guarantee we're not going to hear from them and they'll be out of business in 6 months. And sure enough, I mean, you have this gold, this pot of gold, right? These people that have come to your establishment to buy your food and taste your whatever, you have now their name and email. You should be setting up a list that says, thank you for coming. Here's a coupon. We're going to be sending you emails over the coming weeks about our business and what we do, what our story is, you know, and they don't do it. And there's people that are already gathering the information. They don't create a keep in touch program, a drip campaign. It's so easy to do these days. And they are now, unfortunately, out of business. Not because of COVID. This was years ago.
Yeah.
But I see that constantly. They're like doing some of the things, but they're not taking it to the next step. Like,
or they'll do it wrong. So, for example, I mean, you know, because of canned spam and GDPR and everything, you have to be careful about a list. And so a lot of the things require a double opt-in, but that's quite easy because you can write to that person, as you suggest, saying, hey, you're in my goldfish bowl, but you didn't win the free lunch. But you know what? I'd like to keep you up to speed with what we're doing. We've got special menus, or if it's a hairdresser's, we've got, you know, autumn colors or whatever, whatever. And say, you know, and if you're not comfortable to be on the list, you can unsubscribe. But if you'd like to be on the list, just buzz us an email back and let us know what you would like to see in the newsletter. What would you like to read about? And so basically you've got their consent because they've
written permission back to marketing.
You.
Didn't somebody write a book, Seth Godin or something, one of the
That's
authors?
Right.
Yeah, permission marketing.
But the point is you have been a little bit more subtle about it and said, look, let me know what you would like to have in the newsletter.
Yeah. Exactly.
But they can never come back to you and say, oh, I didn't want to be on your list. You shouldn't be sending it to me. Like, you wrote to me. You said you wanted these things in the newsletter, so you're on my newsletter list.
Yeah, there you go. I get people all the time, oh, you're unsubscribed. Get me off this list. I'm like, no problem. I always put in the emails, if you're having trouble unsubscribing, just send us a note and we'll take you off the list. It's no problem. And I know we've been on the call for a long time, but you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on is because you have so many good ideas for small business owners from a creative standpoint and an observation standpoint, a lot of because of your experience. But I wanted to know, and you could tell people, and we'll also put it in the show notes, you know, you're in London and I'm in the United States, but I think people all over can learn from you. So how can they like connect with you, interact with you, get on your mailing list, whatever you do, how can they do that?
Well, I have a website, which is www. GSPconsult, all one word, .com.
Okay.
And obviously, there'll be an email address in the show notes that they can write to
me. And the website address, we'll put that in. Are you on any social media platforms?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. Okay. I'm on LinkedIn as Gillian Pritchett.
Okay.
If they go on Facebook, I've got a profile, but I've also got a business page.
Okay, good.
I'm on Twitter.
Okay.
Although I don't tweet very often.
I'm on Twitter too. I'm too busy
talking on podcasts.
Well, on your web, you put your blog articles on your website?
Yes.
Okay. That's where they can see your blog articles.
But I'm happy to jump on a Zoom call with somebody if they want to see how I could help them. But I'm also not averse to somebody just buzzing me a quick question. If it's a 5-10 minute answer, I'll answer them. They don't then get an invoice for it. You know, do you think this is a great marketing idea, or give me one way in which I could market X, Y, Z that I haven't thought of. I mean, that isn't going to take loads of time.
Right. And it's not like you have to travel across the pond to come over to the United States.
No, but if they want to pay for me to fly across the pond and help them with their business and marketing strategy.
Right. They might have to get you a COVID test too afterwards.
Yeah. if they'll throw in the COVID test for me as well, then, you know, I'm not averse to that.
Well, I appreciate you spending all this time with me and sharing all of your ideas. I hope people will reach out to you. We see each other every week, so we'll keep up over everything. And I just thank you for sharing your whole story. I think it's really helpful.
Okay. I hope I didn't talk so much that they've ended up wondering what on earth I did talk about.
That was a good discussion.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.